Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Sidvari. I'm one of Kelsey's colleagues in the library. I know she's at another meeting right now and is going to be joining as soon as possible, so thanks. Also, I see Sarah for putting the link to this guide in the chat. We just wanted to kind of briefly chat with you about this informational guide we've been putting together. As I'm sure many of you are aware, there have been instances over the last month or so where federal data sets have become less reliably available, and there are a lot of efforts out there right now in the community by specific research teams, research organizations, libraries and archives to highlight alternative sources for where these data may still be available. So this page that I've linked is a summary of what we understand about the current status of those efforts. So I think I'll just maybe give an example. This sort of started where I was contacted by an instructor in a department who said, my students have a lab exercise tomorrow and they're supposed to use census boundary files, and those files are no longer available through the U.S. Census Bureau. And so they had, you know, they were aware enough of alternative sources that they were able to give their students some pointers to some other places where they could find those data. But that was kind of the impetus really locally for Kelsey and I to get together and say, we probably need to put something together to just keep folks aware that this is happening, that there are alternative sources out there, many of which are publicly available, some of which are licensed specifically through the libraries for faculty, staff, and student use. So I see Kelsey has joined. I don't know that I have any more remarks about that other than to say, you know, this is for us an informational guide that you can use in your work. You can share, many of these are public, you can share with colleagues outside of the university if you're working with community organizations. It's really geared towards supporting continued access to these data for your research, for your teaching, and for your students' use. So I'll leave it at that. I'll turn it over to Kelsey, and then I think, you know, we're happy to take any questions you may have.
Thanks, Josh. I think that's a very good summary, and the only thing that I would add is that you're also welcome to reach out to us directly. We have contact information on this guide. If you're looking for a particular resource that doesn't seem to be represented with the information that we have on the guide, we're also available to dig in a little bit further and do some research on a specific resource that you're looking for.
Are there any questions for Kelsey and Josh? Any online, Sarah? Thanks. Thank you both. Really appreciate the work.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda is a resolution from the Council of Graduate Studies to be presented by CGS President Sabrina Durso. This is related to issues of accessibility connected to and expanding upon discussions we had here in the Senate at our October meeting. Sabrina?
HR and the ADA must all convene to discuss these issues in cooperation with our program, in cooperation with our programs and associated faculty and staff. The CGS resolution before you today notes these complexities specifically and calls for various action items that not only impact the physical accessibility of campus, but also how the acquisition of graduate student accommodations for learning, researching, and teaching can be improved. This resolution has been passed unanimously by CGS and is already being worked on by various upper-level administration through a working group convened by Provost Belmondo. Today I ask for the University Senate to vote to lend their support to the spirit of this resolution in the interest of solidarity with our university peers and colleagues with disabilities. And CGS's time working on realizing this resolution's goals, we've already learned various ways that our asks can be improved upon to better address needs from multiple university constituencies' perspectives. Largely, we come before you all today to ensure faculty are made aware of the resolution and to encourage their good faith and proactive engagement with it. Though I'm sure many would like to spend time discussing the intricacies of this resolution, I would like to remind us that we have a much bigger issue on the Senate agenda today. So I ask that if you all have feedback on the processes laid out within the resolution, to connect with CGS via me at derso.19@osu.edu. Again, CGS believes that it is vital that undergrads, professional students, faculty, and staff support this resolution. Many of the issues laid within it will improve the entire campus community alongside the graduate student experience. CGS appreciates your time and support. Thank you.
As I understand it, the Graduate Student Council is asking for the Senate to endorse this resolution. As this proposal does not come from the Standing Committee of the Senate, it will require a second.
I second.
The floor is now open for discussion of the resolution. Senate Steering Chair Carolyn Clark will have a microphone on the floor for questions, and faculty leaders Sarah Watson and Valerie Williams will be watching the room for Q&A questions.
I move to call the question.
Second.
Okay, are there any other questions?
I don't have the ability to.
Are there any objections to calling for the vote? Okay, please indicate your vote on Carmen's site. The resolution passes.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, everyone. So next on the agenda is a series of presentations about the major challenges facing our university and all of higher education at this moment. I'm going to ask Stacy Rostauskas, Ann Garcia, and Dr. Peter Moeller to come on up to the stage and lead the discussion.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for the invitation to present today. Given the interconnectedness between policy and legal action, I'm pleased to be joined by my colleague, Senior Vice President and General Counsel Ann Garcia. At both of the federal and state levels, the activity and pace are both historic in terms of volume and pace. This, of course, has presented a dynamic and challenging environment for universities and beyond. The Trump administration has issued more than 110, now over 111, at least by our counting, executive actions to date, related to a wide variety of areas impacting and including higher education and research. Congress, with both chambers controlled by Republicans, is using a parliamentary process called reconciliation to expedite legislation to advance the Trump administration agenda. At the state level, we're knee-deep in advocacy related to the state biennial budget, operating budget, as well as a comprehensive higher education reform bill and more. Today, Ann and I are going to talk about and highlight the policies impacting Ohio State from both the legislative and regulatory landscape. I'm going to first turn it over to Ann to talk about the regulatory environment.
Thanks, Stacy. As Stacy mentioned, the new federal administration took office
in January 20th, and there's been over 110 executive orders. That is a lot. That's a lot for everyone to manage. It's a lot for everyone to understand and try to react to, both legally and just honestly to get educated on what's taking place. There has been a variety of legal action, as all of you have seen around the country. Some of those have taken action on a temporary basis to hold some of those executive orders or enjoin them. Others are still in the courts and no action has been taken yet. The executive orders cover a wide variety of topics. On the immigration front, they rescinded the sensitive locations policy, which used to include both schools and hospitals. There are new visa restrictions in place. There has been increased enforcement, about which we have been receiving a lot of questions. They also attempted to end birthright citizenship, and guidance was shared by our office and will continue to be shared by our office around these issues. If you go to the Office of Legal Affairs web address, please use it, particularly around issues related to ICE and interventions that may take place on the campus. The university's immigration attorney, who is a wonderful individual, Mark Hedin, continues to work collaboratively with all units across campus, including Government Affairs, OAA, and OHR, to respond to questions from employees, staff, faculty, and of course, students around different impacts. We saw a new executive order just last night that came out, and so the next area I was going to talk about is research. I won't go into super detail because Dr. Moeller will be joining on stage to address more of the detailed review, but you have heard about the reduction in NIH FNA research grants. Last night, the new executive order is that the DOGE team, the Department of Government Efficiencies, will lead a review on all existing covered contracts and grants to both reduce or reallocate federal spending. Guidance for our students, faculty, and staff around these impacts to research is available on the 2025 Federal Administration Transition webpage offered through the Enterprise for Research, Innovation, and Knowledge. And then there have been other actions, the reduction of the federal workforce, the barring of transgender female athletes from competing in women's sports. Important to know that when these executive orders are issued, it signals change. But often you must wait to receive guidance from agencies to fully understand the scope of changes and to examine the impact. Many of these executive orders are, as I said earlier, currently in litigation. There have been some preliminary injunctions granted, and we're waiting to see what happens in other spaces. There are also, though, remain compliance considerations for the university, given that some of these preliminary injunctions don't apply to us, some of them may be lifted, some of them may be stayed in various appeals. One area, certainly, that the federal administration has had significant regulatory action on is in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. As you all know, there have been a variety of things. There was an executive order attempting to ban DEI. Portions of that order were preliminarily enjoined when a lawsuit was filed regarding the federal order. Also, 2 weeks ago tomorrow, we, like all institutions of higher education, received a Dear Colleague letter from the Federal Office for Civil Rights. This is out of the U.S. Department of Education. The letter takes the position that under the federal law, that it's illegal to use race in decisions about any aspect of campus life. As you may recall, the Supreme Court put guidance down in the summer of 2023 following the Students for Fair Admissions case that we can no longer consider race as a factor in admissions. And there has been work underway with many of you around both admissions and scholarships. This OCR guidance letter goes well beyond that. The new guidance takes the position that any prior guidance that my office has offered, where one group can continue to have a program or have a different organization set up, and it can be specific to one group, but as long as it's open to all, it is legally compliant, it changes that guidance. The prior guidance we were given was based on the prior OCR guidance on their website, They took that down when they issued this new guidance 2 weeks ago. So it's a very, very complicated landscape. The new guidance aligns with the interpretation of our Ohio Attorney General, who is the statutory legal counsel for all public colleges and universities in the state of Ohio. And a complaint was just filed Tuesday, arguing that the Dear Colleague letter violates the First and Fifth Amendments of the Constitution. There's been no action yet on that lawsuit to enjoin anything under the Office for Civil Rights Dear Colleague letter. These are very serious letters, but while they're not the law, they are guidance, and the organization that is the Office for Civil Rights uses them as enforcement mechanisms, which we've seen in the past. And in that letter from 14 days ago, they threatened to strip all federal funding from institutions of higher education around this issue. Additionally, as Stacy will touch on further, the requirements under Senate Bill 1 overlap in many significant ways with some of these executive orders related to DEI. This means that we'll likely see additional legal implications on both the state level and in legislation moving forward. That I'll turn back to Stacy.
All right, so on the legislative front, I was just in Washington, D.C. earlier this week, so I'm going to start at the federal level. I was actually meeting with the APLU Council on Government Affairs, as well as senior staff from the Ohio Congressional Delegation. So a quick report for those that haven't been following as closely as we have, the United States Senate has been focused sort of out of the gate on two things. First, confirming the nominations for the administration cabinet appointees. 19 of the 22 announced have been confirmed to date. As I mentioned in my opening, the Senate and House have both been focused and have passed budget reconciliation measures to extend and expand upon expiring tax cuts, increased spending on border security and defense, and reform U.S. energy policies and cut federal spending in several parts of the budget, including and likely impacting universities, academic medical centers, and hospitals. This is to advance the Republican and Trump administration agenda. The Senate bill, which passed the week before last, is narrower than the House version in that it doesn't include the tax components. So leadership is going to have to work through what the scope of the budget reconciliation package. This is what you hear and has been referred to as one big beautiful bill or two big beautiful bills. Congress has also a March 14th deadline to pass a long-term appropriations bill for fiscal 25, which we're currently in, to avoid a government shutdown. Given the narrow margins in the House, these will be difficult negotiations, but ones that have enormous impact on our institution. At the state level, our leaders are very busy, as I mentioned earlier, advocating for programs that support our students, faculty, and staff through the state biennial operating budget. This includes the State Share of Instruction, the Ohio College Opportunity Grant, and several line items that support medical, veterinary, and dental education, as well as agricultural research and extension programs. I'm pleased to report that Governor DeWine included significant increases for the veterinary medicine line item, and then the State of Ohio Adversity and Resiliency Study in his introduced budget. It's now pending in the House, which has stated that their desire to finalize the budget, the House will vote on the budget before April 9th, in which the budget will then move to the Senate. You may know or recall that the state budget measure must be passed by June 30th, so that the beginning of the next fiscal year. On the policy front, the legislature has also been active with a comprehensive higher education reform bill that has the number Senate Bill 1. While very comprehensive in nature, what I am going to focus on today are the DEI provisions that were expanded from the last General Assembly bill, Senate Bill 83. So those provisions include a prohibition of DEI offices or departments across universities, prohibition on orientation or training courses related to DEI, prohibitions on job descriptions from including DEI language, prohibitions on scholarships using DEI in any manner, prohibitions on contracting with consultants or third parties whose role it is to promote admissions, hiring, or on the promotion on the basis of race, ethnicity, religion, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. The bill requires institutions to provide equality of opportunity with regards to race, ethnicity, sex, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, expression, or religion. Requires state institutions to endeavor to the extent possible to comply with the DEI, the bill's DEI prohibitions, while retaining eligibility for research grants and to seek an exemption from the chancellor if compliance while retaining grant eligibility is not possible. This bill passed out of the Ohio Senate by a vote of 21-11 on February 12th. While some changes were made during that process, during consideration, they were primarily technical and clarifying in nature. It's now under consideration in the House. Hearings could be expected to start as early as next week, although none have been formally announced. We have been working to both analyze this bill and communicate on it with the legislature, but as you can see from the vote in the Senate, it was certainly passed by a wide margin. And given the Republican majorities in the House, expectations are is that it will pass the House before the summer break. Governor DeWine has not indicated his position on the on Senate Bill 1, although last year he did state that he would sign a higher education reform bill should it pass the legislature. And now I'll turn it back to Ann for some closing remarks.
So we have just hit the very highest of points on a lot of legislation and executive orders and regulatory action that is coming on a daily basis. Just again, as we said, as recent as last night. This is not all inclusive or comprehensive in terms of the legal analysis or the legislative work that's been going on, but we wanted to give you at least the high points of some of the significant legal actions, some of the significant executive orders, both at the federal level and the legislation at the state level, so that you're aware of what's happening and the things that are going on. We're working closely with our partners and colleagues at other universities, both here in Ohio and beyond, as well as our associations to try to understand next steps in the application to the university. I know there's a lot in the research space, so I'm going to turn to Dr. Mueller now to cover that.
Good afternoon. As we've all seen over the last month and a half, there's been significant changes that both Stacy and Ann talked about that have huge impacts on research and creative expression at Ohio State. Just to give you some of the highlights, since we saw the pause of a lot of the work in the NIH on January 24th, beginning January 25th, we started a new website and new resources to be able to help you all understand the changes that are happening each and every day. So I would ask you to write down two things right now. The first is research.osu.edu. which has the latest and most updated information on exactly what is happening. I will tell you all that when information is moving this quickly, we see a lot of rumors, we see a lot of work that happens one day, it is reversed the next day, it's modified the next day. And so you as faculty, whether you're a faculty, a staff, or a student, one ask of you all is to be very informed about what is actually happening and what is actually happening that day. You all have the ability to provide this information to your colleagues and making sure that you are providing the best science and information to your colleagues. So make sure you write down that. The second is eric@osu.edu. We have a whole team of individuals that are working across the different parts of the President's Cabinet that are answering questions on a daily basis. We're also getting great information from all of you, whether you're a staff member, a student, or a faculty member on the things that are impacting you in each of your laboratories and each of your lives. And so a lot of the things that you see on the website are because we're getting information for you. We are seeing basically the same things that Ann and Stacy have talked about. Executive order bingo. We've seen everything from stop work orders and pause work orders. We've seen things that relate to immigration and graduate students. We've seen things that relate to DPI. We're even seeing things that relate to tariffs and bringing in equipment from other countries. So you know, the more that you see, the more that you know, and the more that you pass along to our teams. I will say some of the things just to give you some data, so we're incredibly transparent with our processes here. Some of the changes that we've seen in terms of things like changing the indirect cost rate at NIH to 15% would have a significant impact on the Ohio State University. Right now we're about a $1.6 billion enterprise. Those changes just to our NIH portfolio would be around $58 million based on our fiscal 2024 data. If we were to expand that across the whole enterprise, we're looking at numbers that are around $87 million a year to our portfolio. So I have some asks of you, and I'm sure you all have some questions that we're happy to answer by the emails that I gave you before, which get into requests of you to understand your science and to be able to talk about your science with your friends and colleagues. You know, we have the ability, myself and Ann, the president, to talk with senators and House of Representatives. We need you to be able to talk about your science. And so if I were to ask everyone in the audience to be able to understand and be able to talk at a cocktail party about the difference between an indirect cost and a direct cost, raise your hand if you could do that in a coherent manner. So the rest of you don't have your hands raised. I need you to be able to understand that information. The second is, are you able to talk about how your science or how your creative expression impacts the lives of Ohioans and folks around the United States? Raise your hand if you're able to do that. If you don't have your hand raised, you better be able to do that right now. So those are the sorts of things that we need for you every day. We talked about some of the big numbers at Ohio State. Let's talk about some of the other information. 14,000 individuals are employed and do work in research and innovation here at Ohio State. That's a massive amount. You think about the downstream, what happens to groups like Intel and Amgen, you know, some of the big employers that are coming to our state. We do great work in our research to make discoveries and cure cancer, create new manufacturing and mobility, but a lot of the things that we do really power the state. So again, we would like to let you know that we have groups and teams that are working on these things at least 7 days a week to understand the impact to your lives. We've done a lot of models of how each of some of the things that are happening today, but also some of the things that we don't know and anticipate to make sure that the research laboratories, the education, a lot of the work that we're doing can continue to happen. So we are here and here to help you. Please do reach out. We're responding to every single email we get. We will continue to do that. Every situation is very different. So if you don't see your answer on the website, please let us know and we'll be there for you. So things will continue to change. We will continue to be able to pivot. We have not made changes that a lot of universities have made in terms of their hiring. Being conservative, we want to make sure that we have the right answers and we're thoughtful when we make these changes. So I will turn it back over to President Carter for some additional remarks.
All right, again, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks to Stacy, Ann, and Peter for sharing those incredible updates. As everybody in this room knows, we're at a historic intersection for higher education. Our leadership team has spent a great deal of time so far since the new year, working to navigate the new policy landscapes that we find ourselves in, both at the state and federal levels. I'm going to take a few minutes to elaborate on the comments you just heard and share a few steps that we're taking as we move forward. Certainly, it's not a surprise to us that this new administration would have new priorities. Change is a part of every transition in elected leadership, and we always need to be prepared to adjust. Although the adjustments we've seen here, the rate of change from this new administration in particular, has been exceptionally rapid. Our teams have been working day and night to stay on top of these developments. Higher education has been front and center in many of these discussions happening across our nation like we've never seen really in our higher education history. We have seen a number of new policies and executive orders put forward that you just heard about and directly touch not only us, but all of our peer institutions, to include our colleagues here in Ohio, who I talked to just this morning. We know in some cases that the impact of Ohio State is and will be significant. Dr. Moeller just talked about the effort to reduce indirect funding from the NIH research grants. Significant impact. And we didn't even talk about National Science Foundation, DOD, Department of Energy, and all of the other federal agencies for which we do federal contracts. The administration has also made it a priority to eliminate DEI work from all areas of government, including public education. This is not something that we initiated. This is something that's coming from the federal government. A similar effort at the state level, which many of you are familiar with, is making its way through our legislature now. In Ohio, as Ann Garcia just talked about, and Ohio's Attorney General has written to us advising that DEI programs are unconstitutional. The Attorney General's advice mimics guidance we received from the federal government 2 weeks ago that essentially said that the Supreme Court decision invalidating affirmative action applies broadly across everything we do. The federal government has indicated its intent to enforce its guidance, raising the prospect of the loss of federal funding for institutions that do not comply. It probably goes without saying that losing federal dollars would have not only a significant impact on our university, we would almost cease to exist. We rely on federal support for everything from student financial aid to research to programming. As president, and I'm proud to be your president, it would violate my fiduciary duty and my moral obligation to protect our students, faculty, and staff. To put us at risk of losing crucial federal dollars is something that we all cannot tolerate. This is a rapidly evolving situation that changes by the day. Many of these issues are getting tied up in the courts. We're well aware of all the court cases. Nobody can predict the outcome of any one of these legal cases. What we do know is this. Taken together, what's happening at the state and federal levels is a clear signal that we will need to do some things differently, especially when it comes to DEI. As I shared with the Board of Trustees last week, and you should all know that I have their full support in the announcements I'll be making, our mission is not changing. Ohio State will always be a place where all are welcome and where we treat each other with respect and fairness. We celebrate and value diversity of ideas and backgrounds. We are a university for all. We cherish and uphold the time-honored value of academic freedom and freedom of speech. None of those things will change. At the same time, we have to remember this, we are a public institution. We must follow the laws and regulations that govern us. The reality is we need to make some changes to the ways we have historically gone around our work and ensuring access and opportunity for all. Now let me be very honest and sincere with you. I know that these are hard conversations. I know there's a lot of angst on our campus. I want to sit here and tell you and give you all the predictive future of what's going to happen. And I can't even do that today, for as much as that we know. The good news, if there is any, is that we have been proactive and we have put ourselves in a position as best we can to chart our own path, rather than simply have things done to us. And that is the confluence of actions that have happened at the federal and state level. We started taking a careful look at our DEI work last year, and earlier this month we stood up two working groups to look at our jobs and programs. The ongoing developments at the state and federal levels have accelerated our work. There are a lot of people working very hard under a very tight timeline and very rapidly changing information to help bring us in line with this changing guidance. I can't stand here today and tell you I know the answer to every question about what changes we may need to make going forward. I promise, as I'm being today, that I will be transparent and clear and forthcoming with information as we know it. And that work is going to continue to go on. But today I want to share with you some of the initial steps that we're taking, And I hate to say this, but these are initial steps. I brought with me a copy of a letter that I'm sending to the entire campus. You'll be receiving it shortly. And out of respect for this body, I wanted to address this governance body first before anybody saw that email. That email will go out this afternoon and give a number of important updates. There'll be a story that follows on with that. I want to share the contents with you in advance, given how much I do value our relationship. In this letter, we are informing the campus of the following actions. First, we are sunsetting the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, along with some of its services. The Morrill and Young scholarships and the people associated with managing those scholarships will be maintained, as well as all other scholarship programs, to include Pell and any other federal or or any other scholarships that any student is on here. We will fulfill that commitment. So let me be clear about this. If you are a student and you have earned a scholarship here with us, we are going to honor that scholarship. We will be discontinuing the programming and services offered by the Center for Belonging and Social Change. Any student who is employed by either of those organizations will continue to be employed. We will not disadvantage any student in any of these actions. And the Office of Student Affairs and Student Life will be working to reimagine what will happen with those spaces, working with other students, faculty, and staff who would like to be involved to make sure that the good work that was being done by those offices can now be done for all students. Finally, the Office of Institutional Equity will be renamed as the Office of Civil Rights Compliance to more accurately capture its role as a university-wide resource for receiving, investigating, and resolving all reports of discrimination, harassment, and sexual misconduct. The office will report solely to the Office of University Compliance and Integrity going forward. These steps are likely to have an impact on our workforce. We will do everything we can to minimize the impact on our people, and all those impacted will receive separate emails and may have been contacted separately. For those colleagues who are part of the programs being discontinued, we will follow the university's standard process to work with them to find other jobs within the Ohio State wherever possible. And again, I want to reiterate, any student that is employed by us will continue to have employment. No student will be disadvantaged by these announcements. We should expect additional changes, possibly, as we move forward. As decisions are made, information about services and programs will be removed or changed across university websites, social media, and materials. Now, I know the changes, both the ones we're sharing today and those that may come, will likely disappoint many in our campus community, and I understand that. None of these are taken easily, and none of these decisions have been made quickly. They are, however, a product of the reality of our current environment. I think we can take some pride in knowing we are doing the best we can with the information we have available to us. We are doing it in a future-oriented way to the best of our ability. And we are inviting everyone at Ohio State to be part of the solution. This may not be the work that we imagine for ourselves, but we have an opportunity to do it together so that Ohio State continues to be a welcoming, inclusive community for all. I've talked a lot about some of the things that are going away. Let me talk about some of the things that are still here. The most important thing is our values. Our mission statement, what we do. Let me finish. They are still there. The work that's being done in the colleges at the unit level, they are all still going to continue in this important work. All of the institutes, the organizations, the Kerwin Institute, the Hale Cultural Center, they are all still intact. All academic programs, the world-class faculty, everything that we do here will all still continue. I would ask us to continue to show each other grace and compassion as we work through this new landscape together. I know there are passionate opinions on many sides of these issues, and I understand the questions and concerns I've heard for many of you as we face what I think is a uniquely uncertain time in our industry. I also don't want us to lose sight of the reason that we're all here in the first place, and that is to educate our students and meet the needs of Ohio and the world. That work is going to continue. We still have the bold vision to create the future here at Ohio State, and I'm excited to work towards that vision together with all of you. Change is hard, and none of us always ask for it. It is part of life. We at Ohio State are not immune from that. Our job is to adapt and find new ways to deliver the work that's expected of us, while still doing all we can to support all of our students, our faculty, and staff to ensure that they are successful during their time here at Ohio State. Meanwhile, supporting the world-class education, research, and patient care that we've always been known for. I know there's going to be a lot more conversation, a lot of questions. We have subject matter experts that will help us with that. Today is not the time that we're going to go through Q&A in this body, but I look forward to having that conversation as we get this work done. I want to say thank you again for allowing our team to join me here today. I'm going to turn it back over to the Senate Crescent, Senate Chair.
Thank you.
Senate Secretary. So I'm going to, at this time, we're going to hear from our some of our constituent groups, beginning with Bobby McAlpine, who is president of undergraduate. Beginning with Angel Marie Rivera Sanchez, who's going to speak on behalf of the Interprofessional Council, followed by Sabrina Durso, who will be speaking on behalf of the Council of Graduate Students. Then Bobby will be speaking on behalf of undergraduate student government. And after that, Tracy Boggs, president of University Staff Advisory Committee, will be speaking. And then Sarah Watson, the faculty council chair, will conclude the constituent remarks. So, Angel Marie.
Right here.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Angel Marie Rivera Sanchez, and I am a first-year student right here at the Moritz College of Law. I come here today to speak on behalf of the Interprofessional Council. We greatly appreciate the opportunity to advocate on behalf of our constituency and find it imperative to use this moment to speak on the serious ways in which our constituents are being adversely affected by government action at the state and federal level. Specifically, we want to bring your attention to the Advanced Ohio Higher Education Act, which is already passed in the Senate and is making its way through the House, and the Department of Education's Dear Colleague Letter. This is a very concerning bill that has created a great deal of angst, worry, and stress amongst the professional student body. Similarly, should the university adapt to the Department of Education's mandate, students will endure consequences. 6 months ago, I sat in the very same seats you are all sitting in right now. I was joined by roughly 150 other bright-eyed, excited first-year law students who dreamt of making a real difference in our justice system. We spent an entire week before classes started, every day lasting from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., learning about what important lessons we would be getting out of law school and how to best situate ourselves for success. In particular, I remember the many hours we spent talking about the importance of cultural competency and mutual respect. We were told that in order to best serve our clients, we first need to understand them. As law students, we are taught to look at all sides of an issue, consider potential rebuttals, and determine what is fair. Where they come from, who they are, how their experiences in the past impact the way they act now. These are all factors that we must know to build the strongest argument we possibly could for our clients. If we do not do our due diligence in educating ourselves, we are violating the basic principles of what our profession stands for. Our professional programs at the university are meant to prepare us to be public servants. We are all here working tirelessly to learn how to best help our communities. We learn best about these communities from the shared experiences we have with each other. Cultural competency has already been integrated into many of our programs, and the introduction of SB 1 and the Dear Colleague Letter create uncertainty that these programs will be compromised. How are we expected to help a community we are not allowed to learn about? How are we expected to bring in our own unique life experiences if we are afraid of what repercussions will come from it? How can we, as individuals, stand by as our neighbors are intentionally targeted by unjust laws? Our constituents are scared, frustrated, and upset. We are concerned that our education is being jeopardized because of a political movement that aims to attack the diversity of cultures and backgrounds that are the foundation of what makes the Buckeye community so unique. The rigor of our professional programs at Ohio State limits students' ability to work, leaving them heavily dependent on student loans for financial support. A significant amount of scholarship comes from endowed funds to endorse different races, cultures, and ethnicities. Through SB 1 and the Department of Education's mandate, the Law City Scholarship would make professional schools less accessible and less equitable for students who rely on these funds. We need to be forward-looking, as our aim is growth, and not only consider existing programs. This initiative will result in the loss of diversity and sense of inclusion, which are so fundamental to both our programs and the greater Ohio population. I recently learned that Ohio's demographics mirror the rest of the United States. Not only does that mean that we are a great place to test markets, but it also means that we are uniquely positioned to be an example for the rest of the country and show them how we can bring together diverse communities to build strong societies. The professional constituency is the future of healthcare and justice, essential elements to a successful society. But for these services to be successful, their representatives need to resemble the diversity of the population in which they serve. There is so much we can learn from each other, but we need to have the ability to do so in the first place. The passing and implementation of SB 1 and the Dear Colleague letter would threaten not only student success in community, but also the future of justice and healthcare services in Ohio. There is potential for this legislation and regulation to scare future students from attending OSU and encourage current students to take their talents to other states. Unless we demonstrate that we are willing to stand up for what they believe in. Our constituents are understandably upset about this legislation and regulation. If we truly aim to uphold our Constitution, we need to ensure our student body enjoys these protections. By refusing to acknowledge systemic barriers to and within higher education, we engage in the very same discrimination that these government actions claim to address. I'll end with this. We at IPC are determined to serve our community by making our voices heard to ensure that all current and future students can grow and develop in a conducive environment for all. Thank you.
Disseminating a survey regarding graduate students throughout graduate students' thoughts on HB 6, and as we have heard from 617 graduate students, we will be sharing these results regardless of these updates. Of these students, 73% currently agree they feel safe to express their political ideology on campus, 80% feel they are able to pursue their research questions, and 69% feel they can engage with a wide range of student questions and concerns. If HB 6 passes, and now acknowledging that OSU has decided to proactively work on it, 87% of participants would not feel safe to express their political ideology on campus with these updates. Crucially, 82% do not feel they would be able to pursue the research they originally came to OSU to complete, and 83% do not feel they would be able to fully engage with a wide range of student questions and concerns, directly impacting how graduate students engage in service and advocacy on campus. Concretely, it is extremely clear that graduate students university-wide do not want to feel the ramifications of HB 6, the Dear Colleague letter, and other attacks on academic freedom in higher education, despite OSU's decision to work proactively towards compliance with these attacks. As it seems, that President Carter and the Board of Trustees have decided that they have done everything in their power to work against these issues, OSU and other Ohio students have loudly argued against, I turn my attention from them to all of you, the last of OSU's elected leaders who can openly act against these rebukes of higher education. This is no longer the time to be in fear of what could happen. We must actively, intentionally, and loudly speak for our constituents, of whom continue to speak in mass at the Ohio legislatures to speak against House Bill 6. Graduate students will be disadvantaged, and largely believe proactively working towards abolishing any semblance of DEI within graduate education will directly affect at least 35 programs in the graduate school and will terminate a multitude of initiatives and opportunities that have brought OSU researchers of excellent caliber. Consequently, this will make the graduate student body smaller each year, resulting in a large reduction of courses offered at the undergraduate level, as many GAs teach those courses and host their labs. Additionally, graduate students will be forced to stop doing research on the basis of insufficient funding, restrictions on research topics, or lack of incentive to pursue careers around research or within the state of Ohio. This, alongside the various concerns of IPC, USG, Faculty Council, and USAC, are unacceptable. And now that university leadership has abandoned the hope of these attacks being diminished, it is crucial that we remind the State House and OSU of the importance of our shared governance model and our shared values. Many of us came to OSU because of our shared values. Proactively working towards HB6 and other issues directly impacts the shared values of diversity and innovation, inclusion and equity, care and compassion, and integrity and respect. CGS. CGS believes these actions will upset these values and directly attack the sense of belonging OSU has carefully cultivated, especially for those in underrepresented and minoritized communities. Furthermore, university leaders, Senate is meant to advise your decisions. You did not allow us to speak for our constituents before you made conclusions that would impact every aspect of campus life. So, to my fellow senators in this room and online, it is time to contact your AAUP representatives and the Ohio Student Association to learn how we can take our constituents' thoughts to our Ohio elected leaders. We must do better than what is being offered by our administration. Please let us work together as Buckeyes to be heard. Thank you.
Sitting president of the undergraduate student government and the undergraduate student body here at The Ohio State University. Many of you just today have come up and asked me questions of why my eyes look so glassy. Are you okay? Is there something wrong? And I've been trying to be as honest as I could with each and every one of you that no, I'm not okay. I cried today, multiple times, because I'm so frustrated. Today is a somber day for many, many students at The Ohio State University, a university that I have toiled multiple long hours and worked hard with many of you all sitting up here and sitting around here today to make better, because I love this place. I love being a Buckeye, but it's hard today. I came to this meeting with the intention of sharing with administration, with my constituency, my colleagues, all the wonderful, amazing undergraduate students. Can you raise your hand if you're an undergraduate student? But I've come here today to share with my constituencies and other constituencies in the spirit of shared governance about things that the undergraduate student government has been doing to represent the students that are sitting here right here, as well as the other 50-something thousand that are out there living, eating, working, and breathing, and leading in this campus every single day. We've been trying to represent them as much as we could, including actually directly after this, we scheduled a testimony writing workshop for all students, no matter what they feel about Senate Bill 1 and HB 6, that is happening, like I said, right after this. So students, y'all should come to that. But I also went to the State House after, over the past year, receiving students' feedback on what they feel about things like the student board members' voting rights being taken away, on things like how Ohio State's education is non-biased or biased, and yes, diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's what we came together and we asked students what they felt about it. It doesn't seem that any of that matters right now, I'm gonna be completely honest, because this whole room has been in shock for the past 20 minutes, an hour, whatever you found out. Our survey reached so many students that said they want their student trustee representative on the board of trustees to have voting power. But the part that breaks my heart the most is that over 92% of students surveyed from a diverse student body said that Ohio State's diversity, equity, and inclusion education efforts and/or programs were meaningful to them in some way. 92%. This is why you all aren't getting the usual bubbly, hey, how you doing, Bobby, that I usually am. Because I don't know what to do. I don't. I have been honest with so many students, so many human beings, that so many people, what they value has just been taken away by our government. That is serious. And to the students, I am so sorry. All of you, I know that you are here today for your own specific reason, but I am so sorry. Because I have a home in the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. I do. I have a home there, and I know many of you do. I'm sorry that I couldn't do more. I'm sorry that we couldn't do more. But at the end of the day, I'm just hurt. I'm so frustrated, and I'm so disappointed. I'm so disappointed. But I come here to tell all of you today that if history teaches us anything, it's that no matter what decisions are made anywhere, no matter who makes the decisions, the students will remain. That we will all rise, no matter what happens, to the highest office, to the highest office in this land. No matter how much anyone legislates, no matter how much people give guidance, no matter how much any of that happens, we will be listened to. We will rise. Students have always been the ones to shape the next chapter of American history. And y'all, I'm gonna be completely honest, it might be time to do it again. We will advocate, we will organize, we will push forward, because that is what history demands of us at this moment where I stand here right now. Turn your tears into work. Turn your sorrows into work. Make sure that when you are sitting here feeling sad, that your chin never goes down. Many of you don't know this about me, but my grandmother was born a sharecropper. And my other set of grandparents broke the all-white block that they lived on. A sharecropper and people who were legislated against for their whole lives helped my parents raise the student body president of the Ohio State University. Today, not just as a student, not just as a leader, but as a testament that in one generation, my family went from sharecropping to being where I am today. That's what I can do. So don't be afraid. All of our stories are proof, no matter where we came from, that no law, no policy, no decision made in any room that's here, in any room that's in Washington, D.C., can get rid of the power of a determined people. And guess what? The undergraduate student government, we know that students, we are a determined people, and we will not sit down, will we? No, we will not. Students care about this, and the undergraduate student government stands steadfast in the commitment to advocating for each and every single student. We will stand tall, we will remain, and we will turn this disappointment into advocacy, and we will turn this into change. They don't know what's coming. They really don't. They think, people in DC think they know what's coming. But if the civil rights era in the 60s teaches us anything, we shall overcome. We shall overcome. That is my last quote for the day. We shall overcome. Thank you so much.
State legislative changes, I want to share the impact these changes are having on our staff. These changes affect our work, families, and lives. As you, our leaders, navigate decision-making and implementing these changes at The Ohio State University in the coming weeks and months, I implore you to consider the impact on our staff. In recent weeks, I've attended numerous meetings and received outreach that provided insight into the staff climate. The most significant areas of concern include changes to research, the Ohio bathroom law, immigration, and Senate Bill 1. I've heard staff express feelings of anxiety, fear, and uncertainty about their future, particularly concerning job stability. They worry about whether they will receive enough notice, if there are impacts, and whether the organization will make efforts to retain them. Concerns extend to supporting themselves and their families, and continuing to seek health care. Some even mention withholding liquids due to fears about safely using the restroom while at work. Staff seek answers and they desire acknowledgement from leadership regarding the mental and emotional toll this situation is taking on them. Managers are hesitant to speak out because the leaders have been silent. To be an employer of choice, we must communicate, care, and show compassion. The latter two being pillars of our shared values. These are challenging times, but I remember the phrase that most impressed me when I met President Carter in January 2024, that we could do hard things. There's confusion around language. Diversity, equity, and inclusion are embedded in our shared values. Even without a specific DEI job title, all of our staff exercise these values daily. I've had staff not in DEI positions ask me if they can use the word inclusion. They're afraid of being targeted or fired. Researchers are confused about NIH policy changes, wondering if addressing disadvantaged populations in the research could hurt their chances of receiving grants. It has been described to me that the lack of communication feels like every person for themselves. It's frustrating for those downstream and on the front lines. We understand there might not be immediate answers. However, the silence leaves us forming our own assumptions and making our concerns worse. We ask that you at least acknowledge the situation and communicate with us openly. So what has the University Staff Advisory Committee done to support staff? USAC and our staff senators, we listen to staff and communicate their feedback to senior leadership. We provide staff with resources and remind them of our employee assistance program, which offers counseling, legal and financial consultation. However, my support alone doesn't carry the same weight. Staff want to hear that their leaders care, value their contributions to Ohio State, and are aware of their fears and anxieties. I feel compelled to share that I wouldn't be here where I am today without the Office of Diversity and Inclusion at The Ohio State University. When I wanted to pursue education here, my father said I wasn't going anywhere without a scholarship. Through hard work and the support of my guidance counselor, I earned, was not handed, a minority scholarship, now named the Morrill Scholarship.
I know that's right.
Yeah. ODI and the
Fisher College of Business, Office of Diversity and Inclusion, provided the support that I needed to thrive in a new and unfamiliar environment. Staff members lifted me up then and continue to lift up students today. Mm-hmm. Education for citizenship involves removing barriers and providing access in this evolving world of higher education. But the battle doesn't end once the students arrive. It's about them staying here. Staff run programs that contribute to student success and support of our employees. We must celebrate the diverse identities and encourage staff to be themselves, creating a workplace of choice. I urge you, leadership, to sit down and talk with staff members. Listen to the transgender community about their fears around the bathroom bill. Talk with those who are afraid and slightly unsure of what to do if ICE enters their clinics or classrooms. Mm-hmm. Engage with the research community concerned about increased administrative burden and loss of grant funding. And regarding those that do the necessary work of diversity, equity, and inclusion, go beyond the high-level surveying and talk with these staff members and understand how these programs support student success and our goal of being an employer of choice. To the cabinet and all senior leaders of the university and medical center, find a way to let your staff know that you care. Include staff in these work groups and decision-making processes as you navigate the future of Ohio State. Communicate regularly with staff who have dedicated themselves to Ohio State for years. We are the Ohio State University, and we can do hard things.
Approximately 8,400 faculty at Ohio State. And since we couldn't connect with them all personally, we sent out a survey last week asking faculty to share their concerns and thoughts around the current political environment. We received nearly 500 responses, not as many as the graduate students, but still pretty good, from a wide range of colleges. Overall, I think the survey suggests that morale is pretty low. Faculty, as always, we didn't agree on everything, but today in my remarks I want to focus on two themes where there was broad consensus. And here I think I'm going to echo what Tracy just talked about, but put a somewhat different spin. So one are our concerns around the future of research and teaching, and second, a strong call for more and improved communication, and for a strong defense of our mission and values from the administration. As you might expect, many of our faculty expressed both fear and I think grief about the future of their work at OSU. They talked about anxiety in terms of changes in the teaching sphere. There's a widespread belief that many of the executive orders and SB1 are designed to restrict academic freedom and instill fear in our classrooms. And there are worries that this is going to curtail the communication of evidence-based information on topics like climate change, sexual health, at a time when misinformation is running rampant. There are also worries about our ability to teach about fundamental racial and gender disparities in American life. In terms of our research, many of our faculty are deeply anxious about how the cuts to NIH overheads and the cancellation of other types of funding will put their research agendas at risk. They have major concerns about job security, not just for themselves, but for the members of their research teams, many of whom are in a much more vulnerable position. And then, irrespective of the funding landscape, we also have faculty who are worried that their entire stream of research to which they have devoted their entire career are now going to be effectively prohibited. Okay. And just as a special shout out to our colleagues in the medical college, Medical Center, you know, we had many of them report worries about a reduced ability to deliver effective clinical care, given the care that our patients deserve, given a lot of these restrictions. So I could give you 100 more examples easily, but the takeaway here is, I think, sort of grief and fear over the future. The other major theme that surfaced in our survey and in other comments that we've received from faculty is a strong plea for more communication and information. So we really appreciate your willingness to come here today and to give us these updates, and I think this is a great start. But the survey really emphasized a desire to have just more of this type of communication on a regular basis. Okay. So what type of information are our faculty, what would they like to see? And here, I thought it would be useful to focus on some of the concrete questions that faculty have, where I think it should be in the university's power to answer. There's a lot we can't control, but you know, there's a lot we can. So these are some of the questions that have come up. What is the university's contingency plan if federal grant support is cut? Will there be bridge funding? For how long? Should we be advising our graduate students to stay in their PhD programs? Will we have to lay off staff? If so, when will the university tell us this needs to happen? Early career faculty are asking for clear guidance around how funding shifts will be acknowledged and accounted for in the tenure and promotion process. At least in some units, our faculty are being advised to kind of continue as usual, apply for grants, but they are having, you know, really deep worries that if the money is just going to disappear, that they're going to be punished in the medium to long term. With respect to SB1, in terms of the anti-DEI provisions, I don't think it'll surprise you that there was strong faculty support for continuing our work in this space. And you know, I'll be frank, just as you've seen the response today in this room, I think there's going to be deep disappointment and again, grief about the changes that were just announced. In the survey, many faculty mentioned a concern about preemptive compliance or over-compliance. And, a real mourning of our values and our commitments here. And as the administration, as the university moves forward, I want to encourage our leadership to do as much as possible to communicate about evolving plans in this space and to incorporate campus stakeholders. So for example, you mentioned, you know, there's two working groups working on the DEI space. But in our survey, faculty were like, well, who's on these, right? Who's on these working groups, right? What are they talking about? Questions like what's going to happen to our diversity committees and to our gen ed requirements, and you know, there's a lot of questions. And so we just ask that we be included in these conversations. Just another SB1 concern. SB1 also requires a new kind of post-tenure review process. It's going to empower our already powerful chairs and deans with new roles or, you know, powers that they haven't necessarily played before, including the ability, arguably, to revoke tenure without due process. So what is OSU planning to do to protect academic freedom from potential abuses of power here? Finally, faculty expressed a very strong desire to hear from the administration about efforts to affirm our institutional values and work. Many of us are asking, who is standing up for us right now? Who's standing up for our work and for our institution? We understand the constraints, but we feel abandoned by the general institutional side. So faculty want to know, again, I think some of the information provided here today was helpful, but it needs to be communicated more widely. What is the university doing to make the case that the research that we do is important and that the work that we do affects the health of Central Ohio, right? Are we estimating impacts? It sounds like we are, but if so, can we share them publicly, you know, with Ohio residents, with our alumni? Like, shout it from the mountaintops. how is the university making the case that academic freedom must be protected against the types of legislative incursions that we're seeing from our Ohio State House? Can you tell us, all of us, more about what the university is doing to inform the public, the legislature, the governor, about the concrete costs of these bills? What are we doing to publicize the harms that are taking place? Shows that this type of work is taking place, right? I know you guys are working 7 days a week, like 15, 20-hour days, but I think very few people in our community know that because there's just been sort of this radio silence, and that phrase came up a lot. So, faculty just respectfully request leadership to sponsor more sessions, to do more communication, open forums, college town halls, right? Like sessions where we can ask questions without sort of fear of reprisal and get answers. So as I started, I'll end. Our community is, I think, fearful and stressed and grieving, but I do think that more communication and inclusion in these conversations would go really a long way in improving morale during these difficult times. Thank you.
First of all, I want to say thank you to all our speakers. I want to say thank you to all the undergraduate, graduate students, the staff, everybody that came here. I want to acknowledge all the passion that is here. I know how problematic and how difficult this is. I want to say thank you particularly to our undergraduate president, Bobby McAlpine. Incredibly impassioned speech. It's exactly what I would hope our student body would want to be, solution-oriented. And you are the future. You are the future. And I know that it looks like we're somehow complicit with the General Assembly and Senate Bill 1. You should know that we worked hard to oppose most of everything that's been talked about here today. We've made those arguments already. That's already been done. And that's happened sometimes when you see it or you don't. But we're doing everything we can to preserve academic freedom, to preserve the quality of education that's done here. So your administration, yes, I know we can always communicate more and make sure that we're doing everything we can to communicate across. That's one of the reasons I wanted to do this in front of this body today. And we will do everything to persevere. Everything that will happen, particularly in the DEI space, even with ODI, unfortunately sunsetted, to preserve the priority funding that we must have to get this university and keep it running, those elements can still happen. They can still occur. There's nothing that prevents us from doing that outstanding work. And it is outstanding work, and I know how important it is. So that is part of the future solution. And I promise and I dedicate myself to make sure that we keep this university on track and continue to be the great university that we always have. At this time, Senate is now adjourned. Our next meeting will be a hybrid format on Thursday, March 27th, 2025.
Chairperson, I move to extend the meeting by 20 minutes to 5:20 to allow for discussion of the content of this session. Do I have a second?
We don't need to vote.
We don't need to.
It's on the agenda. There's a discussion on the agenda.
That's my... Jared, that's my fault. Can you tell them that's my fault? Yeah, but I...
On the agenda...
We're asking for is covering the agenda.
A vote is being put up to extend the meeting. Just be patient while it's put up on the Carmen. We need senators online and in person to vote. Ivy will let us know as soon as it's ready.
Point of information. The agenda already has a section for open discussion, questions, and answers.
Yeah.
Are we, if not extending, are we skewing that portion of the agenda?
That was, I mean, not that it's going to carry much weight at this moment, but that was an inadvertent cut and paste. This was a listening session.
It's on the agenda.
I just said, not that it's going to carry much weight, so it's, I'm just explaining
that
the
agenda. Steering approved the agenda.
I am explaining to, this was actually not on the agenda.
No, that is my fault. That
this was
not
on the agenda.
That's
the
agenda.
The open question of discussion, that's not important enough. We have a motion on the floor, we have a vote. Everybody be patient while Ivy gets it up.
Just going to go ahead and go through the discussion, okay? Ms. Clark, would you help moderate with the microphone to see who would like to have part of the discussion? And this would be for 20 minutes. We'll finish at 5:15.
So the point I would make is as a university, we are in a very difficult situation as staff, faculty, students. The point I would tell people to remember is, first of all, if you don't vote, here's a damn good reason to vote. And secondly, as staff members, so we have to deal with the restrictions that are thrown onto us. Individually, my own personal journey as a Puerto Rican, grew up in a black community in New York City, found my way to a predominantly white university in Ohio. I graduated, I enjoyed the experience of higher ed, I really treasured the DEI people who worked with me, so I decided to go back to the university and work. I'm not an Ohio State graduate. It's been my privilege to work at Ohio State. It will someday be my honor to graduate from my PhD program from Ohio State. The point I would make to students who feel like your resources are going, in particular our undergrads, is to remember that staff members care, and staff members like myself, who were once you, care. So if the resources are taken away in terms of the structure within the institution, that does not stop me as an individual from being there for you. And there are a number of people like myself, like Tracy, who have been through this experience. I even remember working with Tracy when she was an undergrad student, and I'm still here. So remember that we are still here. And if I have to do that on my own damn time, I will do it on my own damn time. So all is not lost. We will go forward, we will figure it out. Please remember that as we go forward and figure this out.
Thank you. I'm a faculty senator from Arts and Humanities, and I'm just going to pose the question that I have received from constituents in response to the presentation today. Given that the landscape of executive orders is one of chaos and reversal, and many aspects of executive orders have been enjoined, given that SB 1 has not yet passed, is not law in this state, and given that the University of Cincinnati has paused its dismantling of DEI in response to massive protests, why is Ohio State diversity programming being cut preemptively? Why? Why, if we believe in our mission, why, if we believe in those values, why would we accept the claims of DEI as unconstitutional from an administration that has issued facially unconstitutional orders, such as the attempt to reverse birthright citizenship? Where is our leadership on these issues? I summarize the questions I've received from faculty. We understand leading in this time is incredibly difficult, but for Ohio State University to be the flagship university of this state and a leader in the country, to cave, to comply preemptively, and to adopt the standards that others have clearly laid out as legally flawed, is not to lead, is not to stand for the work that we do. So please reconsider this position. University of Cincinnati paused. That email, I know that the send button was pressed. That does not mean that with humility and responsibility, one cannot say, actually, maybe we shouldn't.
From chat, we have two. Hello again, Apple.
Are we going to take online too?
Senators first.
Senators first, I've been told to say. I would just like to say that though we were told recently earlier today that these policies, that student employment would not be impacted, as I was sitting here, I received a report from a delegate that a graduate student was fired because of the DEI policy changes. I am purely, it is a report that I have. I have not been able to confirm it, but it is from one of my delegates and I trust them.
Thank you. Without detracting from the nature of what we have learned today, Mr. President, I want to draw your attention to the way that we run these meetings. As the ex-president of the Council of Graduate Students, I was responsible for years to run meetings that were meant to represent thousands of people according to Robert's Rules of Order. Especially in a moment like this, when our institutions are being degraded, when people feel that they are not being heard by leadership, it is imperative that we follow the rules set out in our meetings. You should have called for new business before adjourning. It is imperative that we are given the opportunity to speak as a body. It is imperative that we get the opportunity to render a response or even just put a motion before the floor. The optics don't bode well, especially in a moment where you're asking us to trust you. Make it easier for us to help you. Make it easier for us to disseminate the information that you all want us to disseminate and make sure that our communities are informed by engaging us first and engaging us properly.
Hi, I'll keep it brief because I did speak, but I just want to say really quick, I feel like maybe a reminder is due. As you can see, not a single person in this room and not a single person that spoke representing anyone at this university agrees with the email that was just sent out. In fact, no one in Ohio really does. When you see the Senate floor debates, mainly it was people against it. So I just wanted to give you guys a reminder that you represent and stand for the university, not for the legislature.
So the question becomes, there's been a lot of conversation and discourse, and there was a reassurance that programs like YSP and the Moral Scholarship Program will remain. However, the ODI department, or whatever we would like to call it, they have programming scheduled for incoming possible students of distinction. I myself would not be at this university without the distinction program. I did not want to attend a public institution. I decided to come here because of it. So I feel like it is my promise, or it is my purpose, of making sure that there are other students here who have the power to come to college, who have earned, who have worked hard to come here, and to take away the opportunity of students to have that without transparency or any clarity as to what that could look like. Because if there aren't people to, I don't know what the process of removing of these staff will look like, but if there are not people to host these students this weekend or to ensure them that, you know, what things will look like for them, the question becomes, what is the end goal here? Is the end goal that we will continue to remove these programs until there's no one at this institution who looks like Justin Robinson, who looks like myself? What is the end goal? Are we gonna continue to bow down to the legislators? Are we gonna continue to bow down to administrations? Because administrations don't know students, they don't know their stories. The question becomes, will we continue to bow down? Because if we will, there's no point of any of this discourse. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Lavoie. I'm an undergraduate senator. I just want to echo the graduate student's comment about the rules. I've been frankly shocked at the disregard for the rules this meeting and last meeting. They exist for a reason. All we need to do is to follow them. Respect is a two-way street. You want us to show you respect and have good discourse and understand, see this decision from the university's point of view. We can do that, but you also have to help us out. Give us the respect that we want to give you. Thank you.
Hi. I'm sorry. Is there someone up there?
Are you signing?
No.
Hello. Sorry, I was wondering. Yeah. Sana and Eric are online.
I've been putting in the chat several times that I want to make comments, but I'm also not trying to be out of order. So I hope I'll be heard before we end.
Go for it.
Somebody
with a microphone. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yes, and I'm going to be very, very brief. To say the least, this is clearly very personal and emotional. So I want to just give two examples of why DEI matters. In 2023, a teacher, untrained in multicultural education, was trying to do a simulation of Rosa Parks. She had a two-year-old white child, toddler, handcuffed, and fingerprint a two-year-old black girl. And you cannot tell me that to this day, this little two-year-old is not traumatized, and probably the white kids looking don't think they're now superior to us. Sunday, and it was yesterday too, but I'm only gonna do Sunday. Sunday, I was backing out of a spot. Car ran through like they were in the Indy 500, almost killed me and my mother. So I went to the stop sign. I said, sir, you almost killed us and maybe yourself. He went off, called me the N-word, I forgot how many times, told me to go back to Africa, told me that I was, do I need to say any more? This is why it matters. We're not just preparing people to be students, we're preparing people for the real world. I had to call the police, because it also happened to me yesterday at a CVS. I had to call the police and say, what am I supposed to do now to protect myself? I've never felt that my life was so in danger in my 63 years. And every day, I'm walking out the door now thinking, who's next, all right? I feel like I'm just gonna be murdered, killed, just for being black. So this is why I think you have to say.
Are there any other senators in the room or online? Senator? Okay. I just want to scan.
So, it's very obvious that this negatively affects students. As I said in my what I said before, it's a somber day to be a student at The Ohio State University. The undergraduate student government has done so much work, and the reason why I said I'm sorry to all the students that came today that I couldn't do more is because, I mean, I don't know what else I could have done, but like we did a lot of work. And I want to make sure that I see that the time is dwindling down, that we are able to continue these conversations. So whether that be the creation of a feedback form or something for this decision that was made, just so you all can know what all of us are thinking. That's one thing that me and Justin have tried to do this year. At the end of the day, we understand that you all work for the taxpayers of Ohio. We understand that, you know, you all work for, you know, a public institution and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, this university would not go without students. And as you can you just saw, we know our history. George Wallace signed my dad's high school diploma. I know my history. I do. So our voices will be heard. And I think Mr. President and the leadership of the university, I truly think that it would help if you all would continue this conversation in some way. Like I said, a feedback form, I can do it on Qualtrics right now if you need. But seriously, I think students, staff, faculty, and everybody that are here today, the important folks that are here today, that took time out of their day, I know a few people even missed classes for this, just because it's that important for all of us. So that's all I'll say. That's all I'll say.
Thank you. So, President Carter, you had mentioned that you are still behind the values of our institution, which are in, you know, in our label or whatever, education for citizenship. And I'm wondering if you can make a public statement to our Ohio legislators, to our Ohio citizenry, about what you think about the faculty and students and researchers at Ohio State University. Are we indoctrinating students in our classes? Can you stand up for us in the larger public arena? And I'm asking you that seriously. I'm asking you right now, what can you say to defend us when higher education is under attack in this way?
Okay, we're running out of time here, but I'm going to answer some of these questions because you're posing them to me, and I didn't need this to be a debate. And I told you earlier, I don't have all of
it.
Excuse me. You've interrupted four times. Next time, I'm going to have to ask you to be removed, please.
So just a couple of points. First, for the student and Sabrina, you mentioned that maybe one of our students was said that they were fired. What I said in my comments, and I stick behind them, if somebody was affected by one of these office closures and it was a student, they will be given other employment. So I stick by that. No student will be disadvantaged by any loss of employment. The other point that I want to make is, as I said in my earlier comments, the work of diversity, equity, and inclusion will still continue to happen here at this university. The work in the colleges is still happening. We shut the Office of Diversity and Inclusion as a front office, but all of the other elements right now are still continuing. We're keeping that open. So it's much different comment than what happened in Cincinnati, where they just said they were cutting everything and then tried to put that back in. There's a lot of work that will still continue to happen here. All of the institutes that I mentioned, all of that will still be there. To ask my, to say whether or not I support or defend our faculty, staff, and all the people that are here, that's my job. Of course I do. Of course I do. And I have been in front of many of the members I testified at the Senate last year and said that we're not indoctrinating students, and I know that's to be true. This was, we opposed Senate Bill 83, and we have gone back to say that Senate Bill 1 had a lot of issues with it. We tried to defend keeping our student trustees voting. We tried to defend keeping all the elements, everything that you've talked about in here today. I've gone and spoken to the authors of that bill and said, this bill is not representative of Ohio State. This is something we don't think we need to have legislated. And I have said this in many other public forums, regardless of what comes out of that legislation, regardless of what comes out of that, regardless of what comes out of the federal government, nobody's going to ever be able to write a law that will prevent us from doing academic freedom and freedom of speech. We will be able to continue doing the business that we do here. We may have to reimagine how we did some of the work previously in a new way and find out how to make sure that we continue to make all of our students successful, no matter what walk of life they come from, all students. And all of the scholarships that we had, many of them were race-based to begin with. Yes, we're going to have to follow the law, and they're going to have to change slightly so that other students will be allowed to apply for them. The Morrill Scholarship will still exist. The Young Scholarship will still exist. So I want you to know that this isn't about me trying to bring something to you that is trying to be complicit. I am doing everything I can to protect, to make sure that the federal funding that we get will still continue. Because to not do that could have serious, serious implications. For us to not to receive Pell Grant funding at this institution would be catastrophic. And that's what's on the table right now. The confluence of everything that's come before us between the state and the federal government. This is the reason we did this now. We're not trying to be preemptive, and we're trying to do just enough to follow the intent what came out of the Department of Education without getting rid of all of it. Now, I know there's still a lot of questions, and we promise to get to them all. We have cabinet members, subject matter experts. We'll continue to have this dialogue. I love this university just as much as those of you who've been here for 35, 40 years. I'll do everything I can to continue to protect and defend the mission that we have here. Appreciate the passion. I'll continue to listen. I'll continue to try to advocate. And in many cases where a lot of you are disappointed in me personally, I will try to do better. This is adjourned. It was decided we were closing at 5:15. It is 5:19. Meeting is adjourned.
Everybody just a reminder.